Originally from Laredo, Texas, Dr. Norma Elia Cantu is an award-winning author, cultural activist, and professor at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. She's been a senior arts administrator with the National Endowment for the Arts in D.C., and she was the chair of the Chicano Studies Research Center at the University of California in Santa Barbara. Her numerous publications have earned her an international reputation as a scholar and folklorist, including her award-winning book, Canicula, Snapshots of a Girlhood in La Frontera, which chronicles her childhood experiences on the border. Dr. Norma Cantu, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This is a fantastic sort of dynamic epiphany of a book. You know, I loved it from the title, Transcendental Train Yard, to the collaboration with the artist Marta Sanchez. You know, all the poems as they are intertwined really work together and also against some of the images. It's just a beautiful book. Can you tell us a little bit about how the collaboration was born?
Yes, and thank you. I also agree it's a beautiful book. The collaboration started many years ago. Actually, I met Marta at an art gallery for where Santa Barraza was exhibiting her work in New York City. And Marta came out from Philadelphia, and I came from D.C., and we met there. And we started talking about a collaboration at that point, but it didn't materialize until years later. Mm. I was back in San Antonio, and she was still in Philadelphia. So it was a difficult negotiation of time and travel and all that. But she would come down in the summers, and we would go visit the train yards and talk about the book. Actually, at that time, it was not a book. It's a suite of artwork, of prints, that we did at Coronado Studio in Austin.
Okay.
And it started, like I said, just in conversation. We didn't have a title. We didn't know exactly where it was going. But eventually, it all coalesced, as all good things do, into a beautiful collaborative experience for both of us. She had never really worked with a writer, and I had never really worked with an artist, although I'm passionately involved with art and artists. It was not something I ever thought I would be doing.
And when you say she came down to visit and you walked to the train yards, where exactly is that? Where was that at? Where did that take
place? Right across the street from where she grew up.
Is that in San Antonio? But in San Antonio, though?
In San Antonio, yes, near New Braunfels Street, over in that area of town on the east side where the train yards are. Now, my grandfather, my mother, when she was a child, lived in San Antonio, and my grandfather worked for the railroad. Mm. So, of course, we kind of made up stories about how her family and my grandparents' family probably knew each other as Mexicanos working in the train yards back then.
Right. And the central image is in this wonderful book center around the train and the train tracks and the boxcars, and especially in terms of what trains mean for Mexicans, as you say in the introduction, that it's it means both death and hope. And I'm wondering, before this project, did you think a lot about trains or write a lot about trains, or did it inspire something fundamental in you?
I have always thought about trains. As a child, we lived near the railroad tracks, and we could hear the trains in the night, the whistle of that train in the night. And wherever I've lived, even here in Kansas City, you know, like at 2 in the morning when I'm working, I hear the train. And it just evokes for me, I don't know, a sense of loneliness, but a sense of both pain and hope. And, of course, living on the border, present with the way that the train as a vehicle for migration is both hope and pain and death. And some of the poems I had, like one poem I know, the very first one in the book, had come from, that excerpt comes from a very long poem I had written years ago. And when I shared it with Marta, she liked those particular lines. Mm.
I want to just kind of ask you a follow-up question on that image of hearing the train in the distance. Wherever you have lived, you've heard that train off in the distance, and it somehow comforted you, or at least, you know, affected you, you know, emotionally, spiritually. And I think that's kind of a fundamental experience with a lot of people, no matter where they are in the world, that distant train, the sound of it. Mm. And as you were writing about the train and looking at these wonderful images that Marta created about trains, did you begin to wonder reasons why trains mean so much to people when they're listening to it in the distance?
Oh, sure. Principally, I guess, in our conversations, for both of us, our families dependent on that train for work and for transportation. I used to go to Monterrey, we lived in Laredo, to visit my dad's family on the train. And so, of course, it elicits nostalgia, and I'm not so sure if the word is comforting, but it is some kind of emotional tug at the heart that, for me, in any way, in any, I guess for others as well, evokes that childhood and loss, and you know, people leave on trains. So all of that. And sometimes I would send her a poem and she would come up with an image. Sometimes she would send me an image and I would come up with a poem. So it worked really back and forth in this really beautiful collaboration.
We are speaking with Dr. Norma Cantú about her new collection of poetry, or collaborative suite of poetry and art, called Transcendental Train Yard, with the artist Marta Sanchez. You know, I was thinking about collaborations. You know, recently I did an interview with another author named Josh Shank, who has a book called The Powers of Two, and, you know, just talks about these sort of collaborative duos throughout time and history. And for me, I've always felt that, you know, some of the best collaborations are, I think, are more than simply two artists that are creating together, really kind of a synchronicity that's happening between two individuals who might be experiencing either like a similar situation in their lives, or just at a certain point in their life together, or find themselves at a kind of intersection at the same time. And then,
oh, absolutely.
And as I was and as I was reading your opening statement, it sounds like that was kind of the case between you and Marta. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There's one poem that immediately comes to mind when we talk about synchronicity and the way that the collaboration was almost at a higher plane. Sure. Something was going on. Because when she sent me the image for Soledad, it's a man in the middle of a train yard. It's very busy. There's a lot of stuff happening, but the figure in the center, immediately I almost burst into tears because my father had just died. That was in 2004. And I knew the poem I wanted to write, and it's called Soledad. And it's just a couple of lines, but it's so much about being alone as an orphan, feeling like my father had left me and never to come again. And then we talked about it, because that was our process. We would talk and then maybe even coincide in Austin at the studio working on the print. And we're talking, and she says, well, you know, I was thinking about my father. And when he died. And so it just, for me, affirmed what I already knew, that we were on some higher level working together to produce art that was beyond us, either one of us individually, but both of us together.
You said that sometimes she would send you a work of art and you would write a poem, and other times you would send her a poem and she would create a visual art around it.
Right.
Which did you find to be easier, and at first, and then did that shift as you went?
Yeah, I don't know that either one of them was easy. You know, I'm a writer. I write very long things. It's really hard to write, you know, a few words and pack it with so much. So I don't know that any of it was easy, but I enjoyed when I would send her words and I would get back an image. And it was right on. It was like spot on. That's exactly what would fit. Right. And that really, I don't know, there was a sense of fulfillment, reward, you know, something, it felt good.
Right.
She says the same thing. She says, well, I just loved it when I sent you an image and you would come out with words that fit it beautifully. And so I think that's at the heart of the collaboration is that we both really respect each other's art form and artwork and work together.
And that comes
as
through.
One.
Yeah, it comes through as a cohesive, you know, work of art, and the whole book does. As the title, you know, implies, the transcendental kind of nature that you're evoking in the work evokes here. There's obviously the images themselves are kind of, some of them have almost a ghostly quality. And by that, I mean, you know, they're kind of outlines of people or dreamscapes. Even at one point, La Virgen appears. And then, you know, the way that the poems themselves are placed on the page, I know our listeners can't see this, but, you know, it's, the words are sparingly, and they're placed with a lot of white space where they kind of invite a kind of contemplation, you know. And I'm wondering, what is it that you hope, and this is kind of that big sweeping question, you know, but what do you hope that readers will sort of take away from a book like this?
Well, that's an interesting question because originally it was not readers, and it was whoever saw the suite of eight prints boxed in a beautiful handmade box that Marta had commissioned, and it's just a beautiful piece of art.
Right.
And so it was more of an artistic expression for artists and by artists for, I don't know how to explain it. It wasn't like to be consumed in a book.
Right.
What happened as we transferred to the text, to the print text, it really took on a life of its own. And I have to credit Bryce Milligan from Wings Press for having the foresight. For example, I had not translated any of the poems. They were what they were.
Right.
And that was what was going to be there. And they were going to be on opposing face, on a page of opposing the artwork. But they were in reverse order. And he was the one who designed it this way and asked me for the translations.
Mm.
And of course, the minute he said, where are the translations? I knew it had to have translations.
Wow. Right.
Because some of the poems are all in Spanish. Most of them are in Spanglish. So it needed for accessibility so that a reader could get the full impact of the words as well. And then he placed them on this quiet space so beautifully. I think it's really well.
That's right. I think the last time I saw you, it was in Oviedo, Spain.
That's right.
You participated in a panel on Gloria Anzaldúa and the challenges of translating her work. And there were some Spaniard scholars there and translators there who were talking about the difficulty of translating a bilingual text into a Spanish that the Spaniards would understand.
Yeah.
And the challenge of translating the Spanish part, which was very, you know, Chicano, very border. And what's really interesting about your translations, it kind of invokes that challenge because some of these poems are bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be in English and then suddenly some Spanish. But then when you translate them, you translate the English into Spanish and the Spanish parts into English, which is really interesting. Could you tell us about that process?
Yeah, it was I'm not going to say it's a difficult choice because I really wanted to elicit that bilinguality in either one. But it was a very conscious choice of doing that instead of just translating it all into English, which is kind of what is expected. And some of it comes from having worked with Gloria's work and translating Borderlands, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's about to come out of UNAM. So the Mexican Spanish translation that I did will be published by the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México. And then there's another translation in the works by someone else that will be coming out in Spain with Castilian translation. So we'll see what the differences are. But for me, translating my own work is really hard because I don't know if you've ever done this, Daniel or Tim, but you start wanting to rewrite.
So it's
so tempting because, of course, the poems are never done. I'm always wanting to tweak. And I would start to do that, and then I said, no, stick to what's there. So that was the challenge. And it is, I don't know, it didn't take me as long as I thought it would. I really would get into it. And I do have some language, you know, like words like Coyol Chalqui. I mean, you can't translate that. So that is in there as well.
Yeah, and I imagine the additional challenge, or perhaps this is even what you're partially referring to, is that when you follow a poem, you're following language often, you're following rhythm, and when you begin to do it in another language, another rhythm begins to emerge, and you kind of you must be tempted to follow that.
Exactly.
And this is kind of a question now that's a little bit outside the book, actually. It's just more about your work in general in the community and in the world. You know, I know that you're a professor at the University of Missouri in Kansas City. And I know also you're one of the founder of Canto Mundo, which is the sort of literary workshop incubator for Latino emerging Latino writers. And
poets.
Oh, poets specifically.
Yes.
Okay.
Macondo is the one for writers.
Okay, yeah.
Canto Mundo is specifically poetry.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, so for poets, for emerging poets, right? Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, why this aspect is important to your life and work, you know, this mentorship?
Oh, sure. I guess because, you know, I'm in my 60s and I really wish 40 years ago I would have had somebody there doing that for me. It would have made life so much easier.
Sure.
I think I would have been a different writer. I would have had a different take on the writing and myself as a writer. And so I want to provide that. I want others to learn from, you know, what I've had to go through. I'm a mentor for AWP as well this year, and right. that's proved to be a really invaluable experience as well. So whenever I can, I try to help younger writers to find the venues for publication, the venues for reading. And I think Cantomundo came out of a need for a poetry-specific environment.
Right.
So we were in Macondo. We love Macondo. It's wonderful, and sure. it fed a lot of hungers.
Sure.
But I think the desire for a Latino poetry space was still there. And so that's why a few of us went off and founded it. And it's going really well. And I think
nice.
It has more than met our expectations. I committed 5 years to
wow.
doing it.
Wow.
And so I graduated. I'm not there anymore. As a founder, I'm always going to be watching
sure.
out for my little baby.
Of course,
but
of
I'm
course.
Not there physically at the workshops anymore.
Sure.
Yeah, although this year I'm thinking maybe I'll do one on translation just to talk about the difficulties and the challenges and the approaches
yeah,
that
absolutely.
We have when we translate.
What is happening? You mentioned your unpublished poetry manuscript. Where is that and when are we going to see that?
Ay, Dios.
You knew that was coming.
I knew it was coming. Meditación Fronteriza is the title that I'm working with. And I've been talking to a couple of people, Juan Tejeda with Aslan for Libre Press, and with a couple of others, and Lute, Joan Pinkbaum.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't decided where to place it yet. I don't think it's ready. I know. I've been working on it for like 20 years. It's never ready.
That's right.
I'm going to have to let it go pretty soon. I'm also working on another project, and that's what happens. I get distracted and start doing all these other
right.
things. But
yeah.
in terms of poetry, I have a collection that I started, and I'm, I don't know, maybe 50%. No, not even quite. Maybe 25% into it. It's called Odas Elementales, and they are poems that come out of the periodic table of the elements.
Nice.
Oh, that's
nice.
Great. I love it.
So, yeah, I love it.
That sounds wonderful.
And the ones that I have written, I just find are incredible. I mean, they fulfill something in me for science and for
yes.
connecting science with humanities and all
yes.
these things. So that's the one that is kind of taking my time right now. I promise this summer I will go back to Meditación Fronteriza and submit it in the fall, which you know how long that takes.
Right.
It'll probably be a year before we see anything.
Yeah, well, you're in a good position that you get to choose your publishers.
Oh, I'm not so sure. I get to submit it, and then they get to reject it.
I'm sure that's not going to happen. Norma, I was wondering if you would be willing to read maybe one of the poems and the translation.
Sure. Sure.
Oh, that's a great idea, yeah.
I'll do the first two. They're very short.
Thank you. Okay.
And they link really nicely, I think.
Sure, please.
Prelude. Fiery gold crown, sunset over Mexico. Death defies life. A packed train speeds by, transports precious cargo, arrives with the moonlight. El ocaso es corona de oro ardiente que cae sobre México. La muerte, un desafío a la vida. Retacado el tren pasa, transporta carga preciosa. Llega con la luz de la luna. And the second one that follows right after. Moonlight, vigilant guardian, luna guerrillera, we ask, we plead, soften the pain with your light. Coyolxauhqui, help us remember our true selves. Gracias. Luz de luna, guardián vigilante, warrior moon, te pedimos, te suplicamos, suaviza el dolor con tu luz. Coyolxauhqui, ayúdanos a recordar nuestro verdadero yo. Gracias.
Wonderful. That was Dr. Norma Cantú reading from her latest publication, Transcendental Train Yard, which is a collaboration with the artist Marta Sanchez, out by Wings Press. Thank you so much, Dr. Cantú, for being on our show.
Oh, and, sure.
And we wish you the best of luck with this beautiful book.
There's so many other wonderful poems in there. I'm just now looking at the others. Oh, I should have read that one.
Yeah, yeah, there really is.